a un primero de mayo.
Hello and welcome to the Pick and Pop Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Dusenberry Jr. Follow me on Twitter at TheSamD, that's T-H-E-E-S-C-M-D. Use the hashtag PickAndPop on Twitter to follow and keep up with the podcast. That's hashtag PickAndPop, no and, just pick the letter N, pop, all one word, PickAndPop, hashtag it. SoundCloud.com/ShillFreeSports is where you can catch the show on SoundCloud. Apple iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, search Pick and Pop, subscribe and rate, give a brother 5 stars, if not, keep it pushing, it's all good. But make sure to subscribe and rate, tell a friend, Pick and Pop Podcast on Apple iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Google Play. Can you feel it? Can you feel the intensity? Can you feel the anxiety building up? Season starts next Monday. I feel it. I know you feel it because I feel it. And if you listen to the Pick and Pop Podcast, then you definitely hear it for NBA. So you definitely feel it. So there's a lot of things as we get closer here. Now, of course, you're going to be inundated with season previews, conference outlooks, and who's going to be, you know, the MVP and, you know, old faces and new places and all those generic things that everybody, all the media outlets do. There's still a lot of news going on. It isn't season preview, like, you know, based, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. So we got 2 max extensions, 2 different stars, 2 different situations, same money, 5 years, $146 million for both Joel Embiid and A. Wiggins. Both are very interesting for 2 very different reasons, obviously. So we have Embiid, your man's Embiid, Joel, the process. Shout out to Cameroon. Joel Embiid gets a 5-year deal, 146 of them things. Now we understand, yes, he's only played 30-some games and all the stats that everybody keeps judging out. But what if Embiid's that dude, though? Because that's basically what the Sixers are banking on. They're banking on the fact that the injuries are behind him for the most part. And that he's going to be that dude who show flashes that, you know, we were ready to put him in an all-star game. Some people were ready to make him the rookie of the year. So, they believe in him. They believe in the talent, as they should, because the kid is nice. Kid's Olajuwon with handle. And can shoot the 3. That's amazing. And that's this version of the NBA. That's this generation's NBA right there in a nutshell. Imagine Hakeem Olajuwon with handle and a 3-pointer. Right. So, that's where we at with Embiid. Now, the Sixers have protected themselves. They have built in some, you know, contractually injury-specific things that they can get out of this contract in case, you know, Embiid goes down with problems with his back or his foot, which is smart. You have to do that because, obviously, 30 games in 3 years, so you can't just go out here and give him 146 of them things with no protection. The funny thing here is, who else is going to get paid for Philly? So they got Noel. He's gone, right? They still somehow have Okafor. They haven't found nobody to take Okafor yet. Embiid gets the money. Simmons hasn't played yet. Fultz hasn't played yet. Down the line, who do you build around with Embiid? You assume Simmons. Fultz, you assume as well, but I'm more inclined to believe Simmons is more of a that type of max player than Fultz. Now, obviously, neither one has played a game yet, so we'll see this upcoming season, obviously. But based off skill set and how they transition to today's NBA, I see more of a max contract potential in Ben Simmons than Markelle Fultz. But if you're the Sixers and Fultz plays okay, a couple years from now, when you're giving Embiid 30 of them things a year, and Simmons is going to come up before Fultz, you're probably going to have to give Simmons 30 of them things. What's left for Fultz? You know, the salary cap we expected to balloon to this astronomical number didn't really happen. it got bumped up, but not to the, you know, absorbent levels that all the experts were saying is going to or projecting it to. So what if the cap doesn't increase that much? Can you really pay Embiid, Simmons, and Fultz 30 of them things? And don't forget Saric. I mean, they're out here giving J.J. Redick 20-something plus of them things. So, but right now, they just had to get somebody in here to fill a roster spot. But as the Sixers get good and get really good, you know, I'm under the impression that they're a year away from being a year away. So in 2 years, Redick's only a one-year deal. He's gone after this year. You would assume either Fultz or Simmons will lock down that backcourt spot once JJ's about to paint this year. But as we move forward and you got Saric and you got Embiid, who you paid, so he's locked in. You're assuming Simmons is going to be good enough to get paid. You're assuming Fultz is going to be good enough to get paid, and they got Saric as well. Who's not going to take the max? That's going to be the interesting question as we go forward and follow the process and follow the 76ers as this, you know, conglomerate of lottery picks now comes to fruition and they're actually going to be able to get all on the court at seemingly the same time. Who's going to be the dude 2-3 years from now that's not getting the max? Is Saric automatically the odd man out? Could be Fultz. I think if you're Philly, you want it to be Embiid and Simmons, and then you build around that. I don't think Saric is that type of dude that you build around. I think he's a good complementary piece. You know, I still have my doubts about Fultz. You know, he wasn't necessarily that high on my list as compared to Philly and other pundits. But, you know, for me, I don't see lead guard of the future in Markelle Fultz. I see a good, solid piece player, like, you know, a complementary piece like Saric. So for me, it's you need Embiid to be Embiid, what you saw in flashes, and you need Simmons to be that second guy, that 1A. And then you need Saric to continue to progress at his level, and then you need Fultz to fit in. But if the 76ers are banking on Fultz being a 1B, I don't know about that. So that extension is very interesting. Now we flip over to Andrew Wiggins. Andrew Wiggins now, 5 years, $146 million. Now he's getting paid. So now Minnesota's going all in, right? So they went all in. They got Jimmy Butler. They got Jeff Teague. So now they have a veteran-laced lineup to go along with the young studs and A. Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns. So now Karl Anthony Towns got to get paid. So Jimmy got his max money. Now we got Wiggins getting his money. And now Karl Anthony Towns got to get his money. Now how are you going to build that roster around it is where it becomes a key point, because you're going to have pieces. You just can't have three dudes, right? Three dudes with no bench or no real depth or help around them can get you to the playoffs, but it can't get you a championship. So if you have three dudes and get three dudes or Jimmy Buckets, Andrew Wiggins or Karl Anthony Towns, that's obviously all your max money guys right there. Now the key is to build complementary pieces around it, and that's what Thibodeau is trying to do. I'm telling you right now, Andrew Wiggins' knees, if you know about the Pick Up My Podcast, and I am Sam Dusenberry Jr., no love for Thibodeau on this side, and Thibodeau has no love for players' knees. Look, we know what he did to Jimmy Butler's knees years ago in Chicago. It's documented. We know what he did to Luol Deng's knees before that in Chicago. Documented. Hell, even last year, his first year with Minnesota, 2-3 months into the season, the Timberwolves of Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns were averaging the most minutes out of anybody in the league. And that was after Thibodeau, who faced criticism in Chicago about running his plays into the ground, swore up and down he was not going to overuse the young T-Bull studs. And then he went right after the first 2-3 months of the season and was Thibodeau. Had A. Wiggins out here gasping for breath and a kid's 21 years old. Thibodeau will run your knees into the ground, especially if you're a wing player. Karl Anthony Towns may slide because he's a big, even though he's a hybrid big, but still a big. A. Wiggins, those knees are young and tender. Thibodeau's going to grind those things into the ground, I'm telling you. But he got $146 mil over 5 years. This is going to be the team of the future, we're assuming. This is going to be the team where if the Warriors do take a dip this looks to be the team that can take that step and be the next type of Warriors team that locks down that top spot in the West for more than a couple of years, right? But do they have the backcourt? I mean, Jeff Teague is nice, but do you really believe Jeff Teague's your fourth best player. If Jeff Teague's your fourth best player, how good are you? I think that's a fair argument to make. A fair question to ask. If Jeff Teague is your fourth best player, how good are you? Are you a championship contender? I don't think so. Are you a Western Conference contender? You know, because when the deal for Jimmy Butler was when the Jimmy Butler's trade went through, people were like, oh, 2-3 seed, easy for the T-Wolves. But then the moves in Houston were made. Then the moves in OKC were made. So clearly, the other teams in the West didn't fear Jimmy Butler's going to Minnesota. It's not like, oh, well, now it's a two-team conference. Go ahead and just pencil in Western Conference Finals. Dubs, T-Wolves. You're like, oh, no. Oh, you go get Jimmy Butler? Okay. OKC's like, all right, we'll go flip a bunch of bums and go get Melo and PG-13. Rockets said, all right, we'll flip a bunch of rotational players and go bring in the point fraud. And we'll do the whole thing of the obligatory, who do I think will finish where, although I really don't like doing preview stuff because it really doesn't matter. All it does is lead you guys to come at me later in the season telling me how wrong I was about stuff. But I will do that generic, this is what I think is going to happen this season type pod that will be coming later in the week. It's early in the week. Season doesn't start till next Monday. So there's still a lot of news and notes I want to go through before we hit the obligatory, who do I think is going to win and why type stuff. Moving on, we have the Cleveland Cavaliers. Look, there's a lot going on in Cleveland. There's a lot to talk about with Cleveland. Obviously, D. Wade has been bought out. He dips on Chicago, gives back $8 million, and then goes to Cleveland, to the land, to go play with his boy LeBron again. So we have the dynamic duo with the Batman and Robin. We have them back together again. And the thing that was interesting to me was trying to figure out where was Wade going to play. Was he going to be off the bench? Was he going to start? And my initial thinking was, you know, Wade's not really suited. His game is not suited for coming off the bench. He's not a guy that can come off the bench and light it up. He needs the ball. He needs a certain rhythm, a certain tempo, a certain role to get his buckets off. Because this isn't 06 Wade. This is, you know, 2017 Wade. I mean, obviously 2016 Wade dropped 18 a game, so he still got something left. But this isn't Flash. Flash is gone. Been gone. So, at this stage of his career, you can't expect D. Wade to be a methodical scorer and bring it off the bench. You can't have a methodical guy coming off the bench. You need a guy to come off the bench and get buckets quick. That's what we got guys like Vinny Johnson called the microwave, because you need somebody to come off that bench gunning. So the Cavs smartly have put D. Wade in the starting lineup and moved J.R. Smith to the bench. So now J.R. is a little tight, as you would expect, because he was thinking he's going to be a starter. But they could bring in D-Wade. You know what the deal is when the Cavs bring in D-Wade. You know what the deal is. So, you know, JR is no dummy. But the fact of the matter is, I think JR is better suited for the bench at this point. Who's more better for the bench, JR or D-Wade? Like, JR is gunning no matter where he's at, whether he's starting or if he's coming off the bench. So let him gun from off the bench. Let him and Tristan Thompson come off that bench and get buckets and get energy. Because you have Thompson with on the glass, getting energy and getting putbacks, and got the cameras following around with Chloe and them. Then you got JR, who's never not loved the shot that he took. So he's going to be guns away. The Cavs have a new starting lineup. It's going to be D. Wade, Rose at the point, Jay Crowder, Bron, Kevin Love at the five. That's a pretty stacked lineup. Now, they got Kyrie up out of there. And Kyrie wanted to be up out of there. But to replace Kyrie with a combination of D-Rose and D-Wade, that's pretty good. And I'm telling you, I watched the preseason game last night, Cavs-Bulls. D-Rose got that step. He still got that first step. I'm not going to sit here and say he's back, because that D-Rose is gone. You know, if you want to go back into the DeLorean, I wrote an article about 3 years ago saying that the D-Rose we know was dead, and it's on showfreesports.com, cheap plug. Still up there. And I still want to update the site and get some things going on with that sidebar. But yeah, that D-Rose is gone. But you got D-Rose who looked good at times with the Knicks last year. And looked good at times sporadically with the Bulls the year before that. No injuries for D-Rose. So this is about to be year two, injury free. But he could just ball out. And D-Rose is still an upper echelon guard. Not a point guard, because he never was a point guard. Just upper echelon guard in this league, because he still got that first step. And as long as he got that first step, he's getting by a lot of the guards in the league. There's not a lot of guards who play D in the first place, but there's definitely not a lot of guards who are still as quick off that first step to keep D-Rose in front of them. There's not a lot of dudes. Maybe Patrick Beverley, because he likes to thug it up. John Wall when he wants to play defense. But besides those two, there's not too many other guards who can like physically keep D-Rose in front of them. So you add that, then you add Wade, who dropped 18 a game for a bad Bulls team. So you would think his life would get easier playing with LeBron. So if you got D-Wade averaging 18 a game on a bad Bulls team, what's he going to do with a good Cavs, a great Cavs team? And playing with LeBron again. All his numbers skyrocketed when he played with LeBron those 4 years in Miami. All his numbers, even his three-point shooting. And then you have Jay Crowder, who's basically, you know, he's going to be the wing defender. He's going to be the guy that has to do all the dirty work and guard the other best team's wing. So you don't have to expend, you know, LeBron on KD anymore. You can just put Jay Crowder on KD. Doesn't mean it's going to make a lick of difference and from some stopping KD from dropping 30. But LeBron won't have to expend all that energy on defense because, you know, they have no other option because he can't put JR or Rich Jefferson on KD. Now you have Jay Crowder, who's younger and just a better overall defender, who you could put on the likes of Kevin Durant. Okay, that's what this is all for, right? Like, this is what it's all for. It's all for Cavs Warriors Part 4. So now, if you're looking at the Dubs, you're like, how can we counteract that? How can we not get blown out in 5 games again? You have to find a way to counteract the KD move. Now, you can't, there's no other KDs laying around to go get. But what you can do is, let's improve defensively enough to where KD can't just kill us. Now again, I'm not saying Jay Crowder could stop KD. But he's sure a hell of a lot better than throwing out old-ass Rich Jefferson and J.R. Smith in a big spot. And the one person I didn't even mention in that Cavs new lineup thing is, I haven't even mentioned Isaiah. Isaiah is now a Cav, and Isaiah is not going to be around until about January, maybe February at the latest, but Isaiah is going to be a Cav, and Isaiah could be in the mix as well, starting once, you know, he gets acclimated into the offense. He could be another guy that comes off the bench, because Isaiah loves his own shot too. So now imagine you have Isaiah, JR, and Tristan coming off that bench. Cavs go pretty strong 8 deep. Pretty strong 8 deep. Like, you have D-Rose, Wade, Bron, Crowder, K-Love started 5. Then potentially coming off that bench, you can have IT4, JR, Tristan. That's a pretty strong 8 to run out every night. It ain't the Dubs 8, but it's a strong 8 to run out. So, you know, they have Isaiah now. And now Isaiah's got a lot to say, man. Isaiah's got a lot of petty in him. He's still tight about what happened with him in Boston. Right? So he spoke to Lee Jenkins of Sports Illustrated, and he said that He might not ever talk to Danny Ainge ever again. Now, why he would have to, I'd have no idea. You know, at that point, he's just your ex-boss. How many of y'all talk to your ex-bosses? I've had the pleasure of never been fired, but I mean, I don't have a relationship with any of my ex-bosses. I don't really feel the need to be like, oh, if I run into my boss, I'm gonna go say what up. Like, I don't feel the need to talk to an ex-boss, so I don't really know why the controversy or the news headlines are going all over the place with this Isaiah Thomas story, because what does Thomas have to say to Danny Ainge? You know, he gave him a chance, obviously, They traded for him. They got him from, you know, Sacramento for nothing. He got a chance to flourish. And then he went out there and he balled out and he built himself into the type of dude that wants 30 M's a year next year. The problem is Boston knew that they were never going to pay Isaiah them 30 M's. So they got him up out of there and took advantage of a situation where Kyrie wanted to be out. And he did the flip. But the problem is Isaiah said he doesn't want to talk to Danny Ainge anymore. He says he should have sat out the entire playoffs last year. Because he said he knew his hip was hurt. And he said he made the injury worse by playing as long as he did in the playoffs last year. So you have him salty about that. You know, he said he was given no warning about being involved in the whole Kyrie Irving thing. Which, again, they don't owe it to you to do that. He embraced the Boston Celtic thing heavy, right? He really thought he was going to be the next dude in the lineage. We went from Bird to Paul Pierce. And then it's kind of like a lull here. Nobody really kind of stepped up to kind of claim that next, to take the mantle from Paul Pierce and Boston. So I think Isaiah was like, oh, I'm going to be that dude. I'm going to get these 30 M's. And I'm going to be the dude in Boston going forward. And Danny Ainge and them were like, nah, bro. We kind of want to give this money to Gordon Hayward. And he kind of fits the aesthetic we're looking for in Boston to give max money to. So thanks, but no thanks. Yeah, so they decided to go with the aesthetic of Gordon Hayward over Isaiah. And he's still salty. Yeah, so he's out there being petty wop over in Cleveland, claiming he's not going to talk to Danny Ainge ever again. And my thing is, why would you want to talk to your ex-boss? Like I said, I got not necessarily no love for them, but it's just, I don't have interest. I have no interest in really talking to an ex-boss, or if I run across somebody that used to be a supervisor or something of the like, I'm like going out of my way to talk to them. Are y'all really out here talking to y'all ex-supervisors and ex-bosses like that? Because Isaiah Thomas seems to be like that. I have, you know, no ill will, but I have no reason to be, you know, running up on an old supervisor unless there's some money issues. But, you know, I have no reason to be talking to an ex-boss. And I don't know why Isaiah's out here, you know, telling the whole world how he doesn't know if he's going to talk to Danny Ainge again. Like, get over it. At this point, you're in a better situation. Somebody's going to be dumb enough to give you them 30 M's. FYI, Isaiah, it's not going to be Cleveland. Cleveland's not going to be dumb enough, even if LeBron does the expected and dips out at the end of this year. I don't think even Cleveland's dumb enough to give you and that bad hip 30 M's. Now, there will be a team. There's always a sucker. There will be a team to give you 30 M's. It's not going to be Cleveland, and it damn sure wasn't going to be Boston once they saw the, you know, fan base reaction to the aesthetic of Gordon Hayward wearing that white and green. So the All-Star Game. The All-Star Game has changed. The All-Star Game, as we know it, is a wrap. Or is it? The All-Star Game, in theory, has been changed. It is no more the 12 best from the East and 12 best from the West pairing up to go toe-to-toe like it has been since we've known it. It is now going to be the leading vote-getter from the East and the leading vote-getter from the West picking their own teams from a roster chosen of East and West All-Stars. So the headline grabbed everybody, right? The headline grabbed everyone. It sent text to my phone. It got a big conversation between me and friends of mine about how we love this idea. But then the fine print came out. Because you put it out there that, hey, man, we can have LeBron and Steph choosing squads. Like, that's dope. That's a dope idea. This is like pick up ball. That's awesome. I would love to see Bron and them picking up. Maybe we can finally get the Banana Boat crew on the court together. But now, after the fine print has come out, and it's still basically the same all-star selection process where you have the coaches picking the reserves. So the fans, the media, and all of that is going to get the votes for the starters. And then the coaches, as usual, will pick the reserves. So then once all of that is done, then you make everybody essentially a free agent for the picking process by both captains. The theory sounds good. The execution, when you look ahead at what you're potentially going to be faced with, is a problem. Because you're going to have all these artists, all the reason why they did this, because quite actually, all the best players, more or less, have been moving from the East to the West, with potentially one more next summer. So, you have the three dudes that left. We have, Paul George, Jimmy Butler, Carmelo Anthony, perennial all-stars in the East, now all in the West. So now the West was already stacked. So now you add three more all-stars that are perennial Eastern all-stars to the West. What are you going to have in this East-West game, right? So let's shake things up. Let's not make it East versus West. Let's choose captains and then have them choose their squads. Dope. But if you're still going to have the coaches picking the reserves, then what are we doing? You're not changing anything. You're still going to have 11 dudes from the East. 11 dudes from the East who are probably not going to be better than the 11 dudes in the West. You're just going to make it a little bit more balanced because you're going to have to break up some of the East to put some of the East on the quote-unquote not West team. So you're going to have the quote-unquote not East versus the quote-unquote not West, but you're still going to have East and Western All-Stars playing together. You can have a scenario where I was trying to look at who potentially could be All-Star in the East. Barring anything, crazy, you can have Embiid, Porzingis, who you would assume takes the next step now that he's going to be getting the ball with the Knicks. So you figure he'll be able to put up enough production to be considered for an All-Star. Then you have the likes of, Hassan Whiteside, Miles Turner, Goran Dragic, Kemba Walker. These dudes are All-Stars, do y'all? Are these dudes All-Stars to y'all to the likes of the fact where if you look in the West, you have guys like Melo. Melo might not make it. Melo might not be voted in. And he might not get the coach's props. There's a good chance Paul George might not make it. Because you got the figure. You got Jimmy Butler. Now you got Andrew Wiggins. You got Karl Anthony Towns. You still got Anthony Davis. You have all the Warriors. You have the point forward. You have James Harden. You got Kawhi. You got the Stifle Tower. You got a bunch of dudes who are perennial locked in to guys who are used to being on that 12-man West roster. So if all these Eastern guys coming over, there's going to be a surplus of dudes that normally would be there All-Star Saturday and Sunday that won't be voted in. So while you have to deal with the likes of Miles Turner and Hassan Whiteside, you might have Melo at the crib. In a robe. Going to the bodega. Oh, I don't know if there's any bodegas in OKC. Somebody get on that for me. Let me know. At the Sandy, THEESAMD. Let me know if there's any bodegas in Oklahoma City. So what has changed? Essentially nothing. They've changed the format to somehow even out the rosters, but it hasn't changed the balance and the structure of the game itself. So it sounded good on paper. It sounded like a really fascinating outside-the-box thinking idea that we're used to from the NBA. But when you read the fine print, like with anything done by management, when you look at the fine print, you realize it's not as good as you thought it's going to be. It's kind of like when you get that new, if you're a union member or anything like that, it's like you get that new contract and you've got all this stuff and on the big headline stuff seemed great. They increase spending here. They're going to give you a raise here. They're going to give you a percentage bonus here. But then you read the fine print of how it's structured out and how it's laid out and how it's not really as popping as the headline suggested to be. So that's what we got here. You got a new All-Star game that's really not really new. You have two captains choosing sides, picking players, but still picking from the same players that they would have had to anyway. But one thing that this did lead me to believe is, what if they would have had this back in the day? Like, what if they would have had this format, like, back way back when? Like, you remember when Jordan got froze out for an All-Star game? What was that, like, 85? Jordan got froze out for an All-Star game. Isaiah was not having it, so he conspired with Magic to be like, yo, we just not going to let this kid, this Jordan dude shine. He not going to shine on us. Now, this is 85. So, Jordan's out there. He took 9 shots the whole game. Dude, Terry Cummins had 17 shots. Terry Cummings. And he didn't even start. Jordan started. Everybody in the starting lineup got double-digit shots, multiple shots. Dr. J, everybody got multiple shots, double-digit shots in the game. Jordan, 9 shots. And you know, who was the leading scorer, right? Isaiah. So now imagine if you get a scenario where the lead, and for those who don't know, that freeze out is in 85. Is why when it came to be 92 Barcelona and Jordan was the god, that's why you got Chris Mullin and John Stockton on the dream team and not Isaiah Thomas. Because they wanted Jordan. Jordan directly or indirectly put it out there. If you put Zico in this team, I'm walking. So they went and got John Stockton and Chris Mullin for the aesthetic. But yeah, imagine if you have a scenario where, like, let's go back, let's keep it Jordan, right? So at the end of his career, let's say, I think Jordan's last year as an all-star, anyway, was like, what, 03, something like that? So if you can have 03, I believe the leading voters were Kobe and T-Mac. Kobe and T-Mac choosing squads. If you're Kobe, you pick Jordan. Now, you've emulated your game, everything. All the moves are similar. We've seen all the memes. We've seen the videos on YouTube where they basically show how Kobe basically did the most Jordan impression for the majority of his career. If you're the Mamba and you could choose Jordan in his last All-Star game, do you do it? Or do you let T-Mac pick him so you can go out there and annihilate your idol on the All-Star stage? Because I think that's what the Mamba would have done. I think Kobe would have definitely let T-Mac pick Jordan. And then Kobe like, yo, I got 23 all day. Nobody else guarding Jordan but me. And he would try to like put Jordan on donut and embarrass him. Just because he was younger. And probably better at that moment. So that's the type of interesting scenarios you have. Like obviously the whole thing when this was announced was, oh, LeBron and Steph, you know, who's, you know, obviously LeBron would choose Russ and Steph would choose KD, but it's like, you know, that doesn't really, or if, you know, it's LeBron and Russ, who takes KD first? You know, does LeBron run up on Russ and be like, yo, I'll take KD if you take Steph? That type of interesting stuff is what you'll be forced with. So, you know, we I think even Bleacher Report had a thing where they try to do it like White Man Can't Jump, where Russ was forced to take, you know, KD. But he had Wesley got to take Woody Harrelson. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works out. We would assume it'll be Steph and LeBron, respectively, in these conferences. But where's the sexiness in it? Because if LeBron or Steph has to choose between, you know, Rudy Gobert and Miles Turner, that's a no-brainer. So it seems like the East dudes are going to be the ones that are picked last. Oh, yeah, they're not going to televise this. How is the NBA not going to... I mean, they have their own network. How are they not going to televise this? You wouldn't want to see NBA Saturday night? Maybe instead of the dunk contest? Well, I can't really get rid of the dunk contest. Maybe instead of the skills competition? Maybe instead of like the celebrity game on that Friday night? We see the choosing of the squads. We see LeBron and Steph come out and have all the eligible players come out and we do it right then and there? Or would you want it right before the game? Choosing up everybody in a uniform, everybody worked up a sweat, and everybody just waiting to be picked and just get their good run in. That could be dope too. But they're not doing any of that. They're not going to televise it. You know, normally the NBA is good at this stuff, at getting, being able to take advantage of the, you know, the social media aspect of it, or the creating the fervor and the buzz online or TV-wise, especially with the content that they put out on the NBA TV. But for them not to televise this, I think it's a really bad job. I mean, y'all went out here and had an NBA awards show. Y'all had a fashion show 2-3 years ago. Y'all were bold enough to step out with that, but you're not bold enough to step out and let LeBron and Steph choose up sides on TV. That's essentially picking up squads and choosing squads live and direct on your 55-inch 4K curved TV. That's what it needs to be. That's what it needs to be. You need to see LeBron and Steph All-Star Weekend choosing up. But the NBA and Adam Silver, who, you know, again, started out with a bang. He came in with the whole Donald Sterling thing. He did all the right things with that. He's made comments about supporting players and making political statements. But the fine print, though, not putting this choosing up sides thing on TV. They put that memo out there also saying that it is a rule that all players have to stand. And your man's JR with the quote retweet. Yeah, aight. And not aight. Aight. It was a phonetic aight. Because what are they going to do? What fine money can they have if LeBron decides to protest the anthem? What check can he not cut? You understand? Like, what does that mean to a guy like LeBron? What, even if they suspend him, LeBron don't want to play all. LeBron's not going to play all 82 anyway. That's just a rest day. He ain't going to miss the game check. None of these dudes are going to miss these game checks unless you're a rook. But if you're an established star in this league, you're not going to miss one game's pay. You're not going to miss not playing one game out of 82. So again, another empty threat by the NBA where they're trying to... The NBA's in this space where they want to support the players and embolden the players to speak their minds, but they also have a business plan and a business model and a subscriber base that they have to cater to. And when I say subscriber base, I mean people that are like you and like me, locked in NBA heads, but not the aesthetic of most likely you and most likely me. So they have to cater to their majority fan base, their paying customers that buy season tickets and are in the arena every night, as opposed to us who support through TV, playing the game, putting the game on social media, talking about the game and promoting the game in all different avenues of content. So there's the yin and the yang where they want to cater to the players who draw all the attention to the most popular athletes in the world. But then they have a fan base, majority of which don't like certain things about these players and what these players are beginning to do publicly on the platform. And they kind of have to make a stand and draw a line in the sand. And it'll be very interesting to see what happens if and when. I think more when than if. But if and when guys like LeBron take that stand and make that protest, what is Adam Silver going to do? What is he emboldened enough to do? Because we know the NBA Players Union is no joke. Out of the four major sports, it used to be baseball had the toughest. MLB, you know, the MLBPA used to be the strongest players union. And they still might be for the simple fact that they haven't caved in on not having a salary cap. But in terms of emboldening its players and letting their players speak out and protest and be themselves to a certain degree, we still have the dress code. But to the public aesthetic of letting their players speak their mind and be themselves, nobody does it better than the NBA. Nobody. I mean, you see what's going on with the NFL and how they're struggling and players are scared to stand up because they're going to get cut. Because they are disposable. They're more disposable than players in the NFL because there's 52, 53 of them as opposed to 15 in the NBA. And more likely in the NBA, you do have the cream of the crop in the NBA as opposed to the NFL. NFL, there's a lot of dudes that, you know, are there for certain reasons that aren't necessarily football related. There's a lot of dudes that are able to sneak through the cracks and make rosters than in the NBA. So it will be interesting to see how Adam Silver takes that and how the players react. Because you have guys like Melo, who's been very standout in speaking his mind. You have LeBron. I mean, remember he had the whole squad wearing the t-shirts down in Miami after Trayvon and after Zimmerman. So, you know, it goes without saying. Opening night, the first week of games, people will be paying a lot of attention to the anthem and who does sit, who does kneel, who does put up a fist, who does anything relevant to making a social standing. So I'll be locked in on that. But I do think going forward, there will come to a point where Adam Silver is going to have to choose sides and choose sides for real and make a stand. And then it's up to the players. How banded are y'all socially? Are y'all really about that life? What sacrifice are you willing to make? One game check is fine. One game suspension is fine. But if it gets really real, if it's a 10-pack, if it's a 20-pack, how real are you? It remains to be seen. A couple quick hits before we wrap it up here on the Pick Up Pop Podcast. And I am Sam Dusenberg, and I appreciate you for listening. Mega Man LaMelo. It's not my man. My man is Carmelo. My man, LaMelo Carmelo. This is y'all man, LaMelo. He's going to be taken out. He's going to be homeschooled. So LaVar got him up out the paint in high school, and he's upset with the high school coach. He doesn't like the high school coach. He doesn't like the administration in the Chino Hill School. So he's pulling LaMelo. So LaMelo's going to do his last 2 years, be homeschooled. Then I don't think there's going to be – this dude ain't going to college, right? So LaMelo's not going to college. He's going to pull a Brandon Jennings. He's going to go overseas and probably get a bag and then come back. Although, would you really want – seeing how LaMelo is personality-wise – would you want LaMelo overseas in China without LeVar or his moms? Would you trust LaMelo in China? He's got Lambo at 16. What's he going to do in China? Dolo. Because I can't see LeVar following him to China. So what is the move? Is it the plan? What bag can he secure to play and still be able to come back and be 19 and be selected essentially as a lottery pick? I mean, this is nothing new, is it? It made news because it's this LaMelo. It made news because it's LaVar. And, you know, people imagining, you know, LaVar homeschooling someone is comical to the masses because they don't really recognize the acumen, the business acumen that LaVar has shown. He has, everything that he has put out there has essentially come true. He said Lonzo's going to be a Laker, and he is. He said Lonzo's going to be a top two pick, and he was. He said he's going to change the game with the sneakers, and whether or not you cop those O2s or not, they sold. Hove hasn't copped his pair yet, but the shoes have sold. It's made an impact. It's changed the thinking of people. I mean, you got Klay Thompson out here, you know, getting the brand out there in China. He got the lead. No, was it Giannis? Giannis was out here trying on the Li-Nings. I mean, the old standard of just having Nike, or back in the days it was Nike Reebok or Converse. Now it's Nike Adidas, and it's pretty much nothing else. So you have to look outside. You have to consider other options. You have to consider, I mean, Patrick Ewing had his own shoe. Now, they weren't very good shoes to me. I would never rock some Ewings. Although, sidebar, I did see some nice Ewings on a dude out in Miami. I was out in Miami this past weekend for Carnival. A dude had the Jamaican-inspired Patrick Ewing. Patrick Ewing's a yardie. He's Jamaican. So he had the white, black, and yellow with the green inscripted on the shoe. So those look hot, but you only rock those in like a Caribbean spot. Double sidebar. If your girl was in Miami this weekend, on a girls' trip, from what I was seeing in Miami this weekend, it was not a girls' trip. It was a lot of fake single girls out of Miami this weekend. I'm not saying I partook. I'm just saying, if your girl told you her and her girls were going to Miami this weekend, all I'm going to tell you, there were a lot of fake single girls in Miami this weekend. End of double sidebar. So, the shoe game has changed. The shoe game has changed to the point where now dudes are looking outside for independent avenues. I mean, you know, Wade hasn't rocked a big three brand in a minute. He's had his own deal with Li-Ning for a while. I know Baron Davis had a deal. You know, the Asian market, it's huge. The China and the Japanese market for NBA basketball players is huge, especially China for sure. So when you have that, why not have your own shoe? if Nike's not cutting a big enough check, or if you want a bigger percentage of the revenue from your own shoes, why not dip? Why not go create your own joint or sign up with a company that's going to cut you a bigger percentage? So it makes no sense to me why everybody's down on LeVar and Big Baller Brand. And, you know, LaMelo is 16 with his own shoe. He's got a Lambo in his own shoe. What you got at 16? What did you have at 16? I had a PS2. LaMelo's out here with a Lambo and his own shoe. I had a PS2. Levels to this. So, you know, that's basically, I don't know what you can expect from LaMelo, but LaMelo's going to be homeschooled, and he's going to get the 2 years, graduate, and he's going to go secure a bag somewhere. I wouldn't want to see LaMelo in China, because I don't know what he would be able to do. I don't know what trouble, because he seems to be more wow for the night than Lonzo. Lonzo's that even kill, chill, laid back, dude that post up on the wall type dude. Jello, we're not really sure about, but LaMelo is the one that's out of here. He's extrovert to the hardcore, he's extrovert squared. So that's the one you kind of have to keep a leash on. You want to unleash him in China? Even if it's for six to eight months? He's got a Lambo at 16. What's he going to do if you unleash him with bread and no parents in China? And that will wrap it up for the Pick and Pop Podcast. I am Sam Dusenberry Jr. Follow me on Twitter at TheSamD. That's TheESamD. SoundCloud.com/ShowFreeSports. We can find the show on SoundCloud. iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play. Search Pick and Pop Podcast. That's Pick and Pop. No and. Letter N. Pick and Pop. Oh yeah, hashtag it. Pick and Pop. All one word. On Twitter. Keep up with the show and the postings. Shout out to me first. You hear his production underneath in the intro and the outro. Follow and support him. SoundCloud.com/MayFirstMusic. So go out there and support him. So look, this was the last off-season pod. We will get into all the look-aheads and preview and all that jazz. We'll do all that coming up this weekend. So be on the lookout for that. Obviously, if you've been subscribing on iTunes, when this show goes up, it immediately comes to your phone. So you don't have to worry about, you know, I've had some people where I've had to kind of let them know or put on social media, all that stuff. But if you subscribe, you don't got to worry about that. As soon as the show goes up and it's fully automated, it comes right to your phone. So this weekend, look for something. It'll pop up. Pick up our podcast. I'm out.